Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, November 23rd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mplanganyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
First Lady Grace Mugabe tells a weekend rally that her husband will remain in office even if it means designing a special wheelchair for him.
I said we design a special wheelchair for him, so when he's unable to walk, I will personally push him to rallies. There's nothing strange about that. There's nothing to fear.
But Zimbabweans were reacting angrily on social networking sites to the First Lady's statement that also added that President Mugabe could also continue to run Zimbabwe even if he lost his eyesight.
It is so sad that we can get such a statement from the First Lady, and when Zimbabwe is on fire, he must retire and go and look after his grandkids if at all he's going to get any.
And Zimbabwe is mourning the death in India at the weekend of Professor Sam Moyo, one of the country's intellectual giants.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. Some Zimbabweans have reacted angrily on social networking sites following remarks by First Lady Grace Mugabe that her husband will continue to rule Zimbabwe even if he's on a wheelchair or blind. Most of them are calling upon the president to retire, claiming that he won't be able to fully run Zimbabwe if he is confined to a wheelchair due to old age. On the other hand, ZANU-PF activists have backed the First Lady, while several medical practitioners believe that there's nothing wrong with being ruled by a blind or wheelchair-bound president as long as he or she is sane. Mrs. Mugabe made these remarks at the weekend when she addressed villagers in Murewa, Mashonaland East Province, as part of a whirlwind nationwide Meet the People tour in which she is distributing goodies and farming implements.
I said we design a special wheelchair for him, so when he's unable to walk, I will personally push him to rallies. There's nothing strange about that. There's nothing to fear. You know what? We have traveled all over the world and seen other people being ruled by blind people, but your Mugabe has got his eyesight. Even if he goes blind, as long as he can talk, we will continue with him, regardless.
Studio 7's Gibbs Dube spoke to MDCT Deputy Spokesman Tabita Kumalo about Mrs. Mugabe's remarks. This is what she had to say.
It is so sad that we can get such a statement from the First Lady, and when Zimbabwe is on fire, he must retire and go and look after his grandkids if at all he's going to get any. The two of them need to retire and go and look after the grandkids and leave Zimbabweans to fix Zimbabwe.
So, but if this happens, what are you going to do? It's likely that it can happen, Honorable Kumar.
Yes, it is very likely that it's going to happen. But even if he rules Zimbabwe until he's 100, it will not change the status quo in terms of the economic meltdown, the social meltdown, the unemployment, the hunger that we are facing, the lack of electricity, the lack of water. It doesn't change anything. And all what we are saying, they must step aside and let new blood come in that will change the status quo of this country.
Is that possible, Honorable Kumalo, taking into account that the opposition is said to be weak?
It is very possible on condition that Zimbabweans put their head together and fight this monster together. We need a convergence to make sure that we remove ZANU-PF. If we do not converge, well, that is going to be possible, I'm sure.
That was Tabita Kumalo, MDCT Deputy Spokesperson, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. But ZANU-PF activist Gadzira Chirumanzu said Mrs. Mugabe's remarks are an indication that the president is liked by most Zimbabweans.
He is our president. He will remain our president no matter what condition he is, as long as he is capable to lead us, as long as he can tell us what we must do as a nation. And if the entire country thinks that the president is doing the right thing, definitely we will vote him again. And this is why you find that we are saying 2018 President Mugabe is the candidate.
Well, there is nothing wrong in what she said. But I think, you know, you guys, you are taking it, you know, literally. What she meant is President Mugabe was elected by the people. Right? He can still do it as long as he is capable of doing it. We have seen so many people in this world, you know, being in charge of, you know, serious positions. As long as they can execute those mandates without problems, then I don't foresee any problem. For example, in ZANU-PF, we've got so many people who are disadvantaged. That's the policy of the party. But at the end of the day, you need to understand in what capacity was she saying that. Not that the president is, you know, incapable.
So now, in the context that maybe she was saying that even if the president won't be able, you know, his body is no longer strong, he can be put in a wheelchair and, you know, still rule Zimbabwe. What could be wrong with that, or what could be right with that kind of scenario?
No. I still maintain that maybe you are taking it literally. What she meant was the president is elected by Zimbabweans. It is up to Zimbabweans to decide what they are going to do with him, irrespective of any physical abilities you can think of.
That was ZANU-PF activist Gazira Churumanzi speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Ruth Labode, MDCT legislator who was speaking as a private medical practitioner, told Studio 7 there is nothing wrong with President Mugabe ruling while in a wheelchair or blind.
From a doctor's point of view, being in a wheelchair really implies that you have some physical disability or inability of some kind. It does not necessarily mean that you are not mentally stable or you are incapacitated mental or something like that. So you could still rule the country from a wheelchair. Otherwise, we would be saying here that people who are disabled, who are living with some disability and wheelchairs should never rule the country. We had a mayor in Vilawayo who was in a wheelchair, Mayor Malinga. That did not mean Malinga was not okay.
So in this case, we are talking about a person who has been able-bodied and all of a sudden he goes into a wheelchair. And, you know, I think there's a difference here.
There's no difference because we must separate physical inability from mental inability. Because if you have been physically okay and suddenly you have an ailment like spondylosis, you go into a wheelchair, even at your age. So this wheelchair business, it may imply that maybe I'm injured or I'm not able to walk properly or whatever, and I opt now to move in a wheelchair. That does not necessarily mean my brain is no longer working, which is what rules the nation.
And then who determines that somebody's brain is no longer working?
But the government doctors would have to determine that. And they will only determine that when they maybe when you now feel that as a government you want to assess, or the person or the president himself feels he needs that assessment. Because nobody can just stand up and say, hey, president, come here, let's assess you. That's not possible.
That was Ruth Labode, an MDCT lawmaker, who was speaking on her capacity as a private medical practitioner with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo. The 91-year-old President Mugabe has ruled Zimbabwe for more than 35 years.
Zimbabweans are mourning the death of Professor Sam Moyo in a weekend accident in India, where he had gone to attend a conference. A literal giant and an academic icon in the country, Professor Moyo, 61, wrote a number of books focusing on Zimbabwe's agrarian reform, among other issues. A founder member and executive director of the African Institute for Agrarian Studies, Professor Moyo had a PhD in rural development and environmental management from the University of Northumbria in the United Kingdom. He played a key role in a number of organizations, including the Southern African Regional Institute for Policy Studies, SARIPS, the University of Zimbabwe's Institute of Development Studies, and the Government of Zimbabwe, where he sat on the Technical Committee on the Land Reform Department from 1998 to 1999. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu spoke with Professor Moyo's colleague, Dr. Ibo Mandaza, who says his death is a great loss.
Professor Sam Moyo was an accomplished scholar. I worked with him at ZID, Zimbabwe Institute of Development Studies, which helped to found in 1981. and he was an accomplished agronomist. He studied in Fura Bay in Sierra Leone, then went on to Canada where he did his master's, and he did his PhD while he was working at SAPIS. The book has been published, The Land Question in Zimbabwe, published by SAPIS. By the time he did his PhD, he had already done so many publications that having to do a PhD was still academic. It was something he achieved very easily. The PhD was a university exeter in the UK. Did more by correspondence, or did his thesis here and submitted it, and it was a good success. He made his mark in the land reform period as a key, writing as he did. He was a key advisor in many respects, even though some of the things he warned about were not followed by government. But certainly he was the expert on the land issue in Zimbabwe, among others, together with Mandi, Rukuni. Certainly for us at SAPIS, he established himself and ourselves as a key institute in the field of policy, land policy. And he was also instrumental with us in the establishment of the master's program in policy studies at SAPIS, a degree which was accredited to the University of Zimbabwe and University of Fort Hare.
He also made a mark in the international community, right?
Yes. And indeed, he had gone to a conference, an international conference on land in India, New Delhi, with fellow experts from all over the world, Asia, Latin America, Africa. He was also a one-time chairman of CODESRIA, the Council for Development of Social Science Research in Africa, based in Dakar, Senegal, and a sister organization of SAPIS Trust, but one which was formed in 1978. And he was visiting professor at various universities, and I know he was about to go as a visiting fellow at the Thabo Mbeki Institute of Leadership. And, of course, he died very, very young. He was 61, five beautiful daughters, and two of them, Sibongile and Kondi, had flown to India on Saturday, hoping to be on their father's bedside, only to arrive to find their father dead. Very sad.
And that was Southern Africa Political Series Director Ibo Mandaza on the line with Studio 7 from Harare.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
veterans of the 1970s struggle of liberation complain the government is neglecting them.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Russian President Vladimir Putin met with Iran's supreme leader today after arriving in Tehran on a one-day trip to attend a summit of gas-exporting countries in the Iranian capital. On his first trip to Iran in 8 years, Putin met with Ayatollah Khamenei. Putin is also expected to meet with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani.
Mali is beginning 3 days of mourning for the victims of Friday's attack that killed 19 people in a luxury hotel in its capital, Bamako. Neighboring Senegal, Mauritania and Guinea are also observing mourning periods.
And French President Francois Hollande will meet tomorrow with U.S. President Barack Obama as part of a multi-nation tour seeking to spur action against Islamic State militants and push for a political settlement to Syria's civil war. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
The Zimbabwe Civil Liberties and Drugs Network says the government should review its penalty on drug possession and abuse in the country. Executive Director Wilson Box, who was in Washington for a conference to look into illicit drugs, says drug abuse has become a major problem with the youth in Zimbabwe, leading to more mental health cases being recorded in the country. Box tells us more about the issue.
I'm in Washington, D.C. to attend the Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. This is a conference that is done every 2 years in the United States of America. The main purpose or objective of the conference is to look at drug policies that are actually taking place or that are in place worldwide with a view to reform the policies, because you find out that the war on drugs has actually ravaged so many families, so many nations, and we are saying that this policy has been a failure, considering that a lot of monies has been poured in the programs to try and arrest people who use drugs and also to arraign them before the courts of law. So this policy has actually failed the whole world. So this conference now is here to make a review on those policies. What has really happened? What is the problem? So the conference is advocating for a reform of this drug policy.
What are you going to take back to Zimbabwe when it comes to the reformation of some of these laws that are being used in the country, from what you've learned from this conference?
We are going to engage our policymakers, starting with the Parliamentary Committee on Drugs, the Minister of Health, the advisor to the President of Zimbabwe on the health issues, and other stakeholders in the judiciary and also the police services. What we want to engage these institutions about is to see whether we can discuss on how the Zimbabwe drug law is. Because if you look at the Zimbabwean situation at this moment in time, we've got a problem with drugs that are actually littered on the streets of Harare and other border areas like Bait Bridge and also Kariba. We've got such a problem. So we feel that we should actually approach this issue in a holistic manner so that we actually give those people who use drugs a second chance. Instead of incarcerating them, we actually put them through rehabilitation so that they are actually put back into society and contribute to the well-being of Zimbabwe.
Which are the most common drugs that are on the street right now? You mentioned that there is a high incidence of mental health issues, especially amongst the youth. But what are the most common drugs on the street?
The most common drug in Zimbabwe is marijuana or mbanje, you know, to some extent. And then we've got bronclear, which is commonly known as brongo, right? This drug, it contains, it's a cough syrup which contains codeine, and it's also a prescription drug which can actually be bought over the counter in pharmacies. But what is happening is that there is abuse of that facility, whereby in the streets you find out that having been smuggled from these neighboring countries, the drug is readily available in Zimbabwe. We also have got cases of Italics. We've got cases of an alcoholic drink, popularly known as Msombodia. We also have got a mixture of ARVs. And these are the funny mixtures to come up with a drug called Nyangope, which is very popular in the Midlands town of Gweru, especially at Midlands State University. We have had some cases there of that drug being smuggled to the campus. So these are some of the drugs that are readily available on the streets of Harare, and they also find themselves at pool parties. Most Zimbabweans remember about 2 seasons ago at a certain school in Harare, at a certain rugby festival, where all these drugs, some of them, they were actually in proliferation to the extent that it was a cause for concern for most parents. So we are saying the government really needs to look at those issues. As civil society, we are trying our level best to ensure that people, they are aware of the scourge of these drugs on our streets. And also advise the government on the way forward, irrespective of any political ideologies or dogmas. We've got a problem in our hands. We really need to ensure that our citizenry or our citizens are well protected from drug misuse.
That was the Zimbabwe Civil Liberties and Drugs Network Executive Director Wilson Box in Washington, D.C.
Some veterans of Zimbabwe's War of Liberation and the country's main opposition are accusing President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party of neglecting former freedom fighters who do not support the Revolutionary Party. As Thomas Chiripasi reports, some of the ex-combatants loyal to ZANU-PF have not been spared by the growing factionalism in the ruling party.
35 years after the country attained its independence from British colonial rule, some war veterans are still complaining that the government is not doing enough to cater for their welfare. One such former freedom fighter is Jim Mbewe, who hailed the government's creation of a full ministry responsible for the welfare of the former freedom fighters. While Mbewe commended President Mugabe's government for creating such a ministry, he bemoans the deplorable situation that some of the war veterans are living in almost 3 decades after independence.
In the War Veterans Act, there's provision for payment of school fees for all the dependents of war veterans, and also there should be monies put aside for projects.
Obet Gutu, spokesperson of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Party, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, says although there are commendable mechanisms in place, supported by the Constitution of Zimbabwe, to accord war veterans, collaborators, detainees and restrictees the honor and compensation they deserve, the current situation is a far cry from expectations. The opposition official says many veterans outside ZANU-PF are being left in the cold as the ruling party uses what he described as, quote, a selective and unbalanced system that is based on affiliation and allegiance to those in power.
I will tell you what, it is actually a good policy, government policy, from a policy framework, to have a ministry to cater for the needs of war veterans, war collaborators, ex-detainees, etc., etc. What we simply want to do is to implore the ruling party, ZANU-PF, that is, to ensure that this ministry is not reduced into a virtual department of ZANU-PF, the political party.
Gutu, who contributed to the War of Liberation as a collaborator, says he is one of the many Zimbabweans whose applications for land allocations were turned down when the ZANU-PF government embarked on the land reform program in 2000.
We have a situation where that ministry operates as a de facto department within ZANU-PF. We have a lot of war veterans within our own party. For instance, our own national chairman, Comrade Lovemore Ndodana Moyo, is an ex-ZIPRA combatant. We have the former mayor of Chitungiza, Comrade Meshack Shoko. He's a former ZANLA combatant. And I can even use my own example. I can even qualify to be a war collaborator because although I was a young boy as the war was raging on in Gutu, I would actually go to Pungwe's. I would carry stuff from my parents' shop to the Pungwe's to give to the comrades. So I actually qualify to be called a war collaborator. But if I go to Chris Mchangwa's office today and say, Obet Gutu has to be registered as a war collaborator, I can assure you they'll tell me to get away. So that is the kind of problem that we have.
Amidst all this, Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Welfare Services for War Veterans, War Collaborators, Ex-Detainees and Political Restrictees, retired Brigadier General Asha Walter Tafumanei, defended his ministry, saying all its activities are above board. Despite that, the ministry has said that one of its mandates is to advance ZANU-PF's interests. Tafumanei said his ministry was created in fulfillment of the new constitution that was adopted in March 2013.
Everybody who qualifies as a war veteran, this ministry looks after. But I must tell you that we are children of ZANU-PF. We were created and groomed by ZANU-PF. ZANU-PF is the party of liberation that had ZIPRA and ZANLA, where these veterans are coming from. So ideally, we would want every war veteran to be under ZANU-PF, under the umbrella of ZANU-PF. If there are any war veterans who are politically outside ZANU-PF, legally they are still looked at by the ministry.
He added that all war veterans were not being discriminated upon, adding that ex-combatants had a choice, like anyone else, as provided for in the national constitution, to belong to any political organization of their choice. While the welfare of war veterans remains a topical issue close to 3 decades after the country gained its independence, it remains unclear when authorities will address once and for all the issues that ex-combatants are complaining about. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
There was an interesting contest in Harare this weekend, which left social media ablaze. Let's hear more from Dimiake Mwakelele on what it was all about.
Nature seems to be at the heart of the dispute between newly crowned Zimbabwe's Mr. Ugly, Mason Sere, and former title holder William Mashinu, who claims he's still number one after winning the contest since 2012.
I did not lose, and I'm still number one.
What's the problem? Mashinu, placed second, contends he's more naturally ugly because he was born that way over his 42-year-old rival Sere, who he says is only ugly because he's missing teeth.
Missing your front teeth does not make you ugly. We need natural ugliness from birth.
But an emotional Sere, who beat off 5 other contestants to claim the $500 prize, he's holding on to his crown and thanks God for his victory.
I want to thank God for winning this title and to thank also the judges for recognizing me as the winner. Last time I came forth and got nothing, and today I thank my creator, God.
Organizers of the Mr. Ugly contest, which first took place in 2012, says the event was a success. One of the judges, Abigail Gwasira, says they feel they were fair in picking Sere as the winner.
The name of the contest was Mr. Ugly, and the definition of ugly, according to the Collins Dictionary, is displeasing to the eye. So we're looking for something like that was displeasing to the eye. So that was the criteria we're using, and we're also looking for something that was unique.
Mashinu, who won 100 for placing second, is crying foul and wants organizers to look for new judges. According to the AFP, there were more than 200 attendants to the contest, which was full of entertainment. For Studio 7, this is Ndimiake Mwakalyelye in Washington.
And in sports news, Chicken Inn have qualified to represent Zimbabwe in the 2016 Confederation of African Football Champions League, a competition for national club champions around Africa. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us how.
There was celebration in the home of Chicken Inn over the weekend after the Gamecocks were crowned the 2015 Zimbabwe champions, with one game still to be played to get that vital ticket to represent Zimbabwe in the CAF Champions League. Their 3-1 win over Harare City saw them move to 58 points, 4 ahead of 2nd place FC Platinum, who were held to a 1-0 draw by resurgent Capes United, and Dynamos, who also held 54 points. This means even if Chicken Inn lose their remaining fixture, and both FC Platinum and Dynamos win theirs, they cannot catch up with the Gamecocks. The Gamecocks will be presented with their trophy in their last game of the season against already relegated Flame Lily at Lafarge Stadium this coming Saturday. Chicken Inn coach Joey Antipas said unity was the key to their success this season.
Key throughout the season has been our unity in the camp. One thing for sure is that the boys, I'm proud of them. They, from game one, they put in good performances and they believed that this is the year, and look at it now.
Chicken Inn becomes the second blowout team to win the league title since 2006, when Highlanders were crowned the Zimbabwe champions. Antipas is proud to have won the trophy for the city of Bulawayo. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thanks, Michael. That's all for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Marvelous Mplanga Nyahuye.